Welcome to a special edition of the Bumblecast. We are here to talk about the latest chapter of Deltarune. So right out the gate, if you haven't played Chapter 5, this is your one and only spoiler warning. Bail out now. Go play it. Cancel your doctor's appointments and grocery shopping and eating food and petting your cat. Go play it. I'm not obsessed. You're obsessed. Anyway, everybody who's joined me, please introduce yourselves.
Hello, my name is Stevius.
What's up? Name's No. Oh, sorry, you go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, all right. Hi, I'm Noni. Hi.
And I am Strawberry.
We're the Bumble Crew.
We are the Bumble Crew.
And once again, you've tied me to the chair like the good friends that they are, and we're going to cover Deltarune.
Chapter 5, and maybe a little bit of 3 and 4 as like a little refresher. Mm-hmm. I kind of just made a little loose outline to guide our discussion today. If that's okay with you, please feel free to, you know, interject if something isn't resonating. But I was kind of thinking, you know, in our debrief of chapters 3 and 4, maybe we could frame it as, what were our expectations or predictions going into chapter 5 from the events of those two chapters?
I could have been misremembering. There's a lot of lore to keep up with, but I thought I remembered the story that Gersum was talking about. When he got to chapter 5, there was supposed to be some kind of big blowout between friends, a big emotional confrontation. And I was expecting things to come to a head between Chris and Susie and Noelle and their families or something. And it seems like more it was the concentration of the flowers and what their devotion to Asgore meant, which is fine. It certainly fits the bill. But I was waiting for this particular shoe to drop through the whole thing, especially during the final boss encounter. It's like, oh, Ralsei's gone, and Susie's left behind. Chris is going up to the top to be alone with Asgore, who's on a murderous rampage, is gonna get sick. Oh, no, Asgore actually turned a corner and had his big cathartic character moment. Huh. I cannot predict where this story is going.
That's what I was thinking. Like, honestly, I did not really expect... From pretty much most of what happened in this chapter, I thought we would like get some kind of clue as to who the knight was, the Roaring Knight. And I mean, like, when I played it, I only really went through the regular route, not like the weird route, which we can get to later. But I would say it's a pretty good chapter. I liked it a lot, but I was expecting a little bit more, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm alone on this.
It did seem to go fast for me, yeah.
It wasn't a lore-heavy chapter.
Mm. The most lore, I guess, that we got was, like, with Asgore, but even then he was kind of beating around the bush.
Flower puns.
Ahaha, but I'm tis.
I think there's a little more under the surface, though. Like, we got more insight into Noelle's headspace, regardless of which route you go on. And we got a lot of tantalizing hints about what Ralsei's station is in this whole mix-up. Having him face down another meta-aware character and showing us that he is really holding back on his power level for reasons. What does it mean?
That's what I'm saying. Also, he can use fire, so that's cool. Like, where was that chapters 1 and 4?
Someone pointed out that the fireballs that we see Ralsei use, it's like a recolored asset from the Titan fight in chapter 4.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And knowing Toby Fox, or as I like to call him, Tobias Foxington, that has something to do with... 100% that has something to do with the Titan. Like Ralsei and Tricky the Titan being connected.
Tricky Tony was having a time in this chapter.
if we're talking about things that sound alike, oh, I have something for later.
Noni, did you have any big predictions for chapter 5 or anything that you were kind of expecting?
I honestly thought there was going to be an Asgore boss fight, and I was delightfully wrong.
I feel that. Go ahead.
I wasn't expecting the flowers. I thought the location would have not had to do with the flowers in the back of the floral shop, and I think I'm kind of stupid because I didn't think about it. I was like, oh yeah, those flowers. The flowers that are right there. I should have remembered those.
I think my prediction, what I really thought was going to happen, was at the very end of chapter 4, you know, the Titan fight happens, it's this whole big thing, and when they seal the fountain, Chris and Susie are left in a destroyed church. Like, the church has been, like, just absolutely, like, everything is destroyed in there. And I thought that the beginning of chapter 5 was going to be some sort of big consequence for Chris and Susie from everyone in the light world. Like, I thought it was going to be a thing where, you know, Chris, like, goes home, Susie's kind of out, and then the next morning, like, they look and they see, oh my gosh, the church has been destroyed. Toriel is distraught because she's an active member in the church, you know, and then along with, you know, the ashes that have been never buried or unburied and were on Alvin's desk. I thought that it was going to be a thing of people accusing, you know, Chris and Susie of taking a prank too far. And I was surprised. I was surprised that that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at least we did get that dialogue, you know, if you go down in the festival of chapter 5, where Alvin's like, yeah, it's okay.
It's fine. Like,
genuinely, I enjoyed being a wingman. That was good.
It was good.
Speaking of the beginning of the chapter, we what is it, chapter 5? I already forgot we're here. Speaking of the beginning of chapter 5, we get to see Chris go back into their room, and they're kind of like yellowish green because they've been without the soul for so long, which is kind of weird to see that. Like, okay, so now we have confirmation that Chris can't survive without the soul for long. Which I think is really cool.
What if Chris is turning gray? Because copies are monochrome.
Hmm. Could be. Could be.
Or they're rusting somehow because copper turns green if you're near water too much.
The copper child.
It's all the moss they're eating.
Can I say, I have, this is like way later, but I'll get back to the moss later. I'm kind of insane about the moss. That'll be later. But yeah, I guess, was there anything that surprised you about chapter 5? I mean, I guess this is kind of similar to the previous question, but any other things in chapter 5 that you were kind of taken aback by?
Yes. Chapter 5. The entirety, the pacing of it, what was revealed, what was hinted, what was teased, what found closure, what didn't. I wasn't expecting the flowers to be such an important, multifaceted cast. I was assuming we were going to get some version of Flowey. Like, the parallels had been drawn enough. It's like, okay, what's the analog here? I wasn't expecting the whole bouquet. And I really like the fact that while they are clearly inspired by the Undertale flowers, they aren't over-reliant on them. They are all very much their individual characters with their own gimmicks, and they were in service to this story. It wasn't just, hey, remember these things? It was their own unique interpretations, which, you know, it's part and partial of what the chapter's about. I was going to ask if any of you guys had played the fan game Undertale Yellow.
Yep.
And if there were any parallels there, because I have not touched it. I know nothing about it other than it was really well received.
I haven't, but I just to add quickly, Ian, like I think the really great thing about the flowers being present in chapter 5 is that like they are very clearly like characters that like exist within the world of Deltarune because they are the flowers, but they're not the other human souls of Undertale. And so in a way it kind of like, I know that Toby Fox has a very like, he has had a very active relationship with the Undertale Deltarune community, and you know, he has supported the Undertale Yellow fan project, and it's kind of nice to know that like this isn't him like basically canonizing what people's speculation of the human souls are, because they can still be like however you wish to represent them. These are just the flowers.
Okay.
Though I will say about Undertale Yellow, having played it, you play as the human named Clover, and you have a little cowboy hat, and your main weapon is a like a little toy gun. So I think it's kind of it's a really cool connection to have, where the yellow flower in Deltarune chapter 5 is a sheriff. They are very closely connected, and I think that's a cool little, I guess, shout to Undertale Yellow, which, by the way, it's a very good game.
You can find the artifacts of the children who died.
Yeah.
Where there's the ballet slipper, there's the knife, and I couldn't remember, is there like a toy gun or a cat? Yeah,
there's a toy gun and there's a hat in Undertale that are weapons and armor.
Yep.
Okay. Because as soon as Yellow showed up, it was like, oh, it's the toy gun, and Aaliyah's going, what toy gun? I'm like, wasn't there a toy gun? Please tell me I'm not making up the toy gun. It has to be there.
Yep, it's there.
So I'm somewhat validated.
Which I feel like, obviously it's not, but I feel like it just all but canonizes, what's the word, Undertale Yellow at this point. I don't know. Obviously not, but it's just fun to think about.
Yeah.
If we're on the topic of the flowers, you mind if I aimlessly theory craft like a madman for a second?
Go right ahead.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead, please.
Okay. So you got your yellow and blue combo. That's fine. They're fun. They're delightful. You got orange and green. They're also fun. But specifically, you're introduced to Aqua and Seth first.
Mm-hmm.
Aqua is clearly a Chris analog. You've got the hair over the eyes. You got the creepy little smile. You've got the fixation on knives. You've got the blue toned skin. And then you have Seth, who is, this might be a bit of a reach, the only S named flower, who is purple and who is looking after Aqua. So Seth is the Susie analog. And I think it goes beyond just that superficial level, because looking at the weird route and looking specifically at scenes where Chris is especially down, Susie is there to lift him up. Susie is, after the whole bully segment is behind her, she is the one who is bringing Chris up, running interference, supporting him, making him laugh when he's them, when they're having the worst time. And to me, that is even more important, especially in the weird route, because with when you're fighting blue and yellow in the weird route, you cannot fight them off. Yellow will take all the hits and blue will undo all the damage. You have to pacify. When you're up against green and orange, green will always heal them. You cannot chase them off. But you can knock Aqua down and Seth runs in to save her. And when you knock Seth down in the Seth and Aqua fight, Aqua can't heal him. Aqua doesn't know what to do and eventually drags him off. And this puts me on edge.
Mm-hmm.
Because Chris is not in a position to help Susie. Susie learns healing magic, advances her healing magic. What does this say about Chris? What does it mean, Toby?
Well, Tobias the thing Foxington. Is like, but here's the thing is that apparently Chris does have magic stats.
I didn't right? know that.
I think so. Like, I think if you go in like the menu and stuff, if I'm remembering correctly, because I remember like reshuffling my armor so many times, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Someone down below, comment down below.
Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Yeah. But no, there's definitely, I think, a lot of like one foreshadowing in this chapter that I think is going to be very apparent. Like, you know, the in Yellow's room when Yellow is gonna off himself because we tricked him, and you have to go around and find pieces of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Someone speculated that it might be like an analog to what happened with Des, potentially at the lake.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but I don't remember enough about it. But like, if I find it, I'll like send it. But it was something like that, where it's like, you know, collecting all of these pieces of evidence. This, you know, very big focus on justice, and then the fact that the knight is now 2 for 2. On collecting people related to the police force.
Right.
There's also the actually possible...
on that note.
No, good.
The thing that bothers me, at least with Asgore, is that one cutscene near the end where you see all the other characters and they're all different colors, like in silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
Because Chris is Aqua and Toriel is purple.
Oh, uh-huh.
While Asgore is yellow and Asriel is kindness. But while he's spiraling over what happened, that yellow soul turned red, and I'm trying to figure out what that one means.
For determination?
I guess so.
Like, I feel like this chapter was very big on solidifying the fact that you kind of do need to play Undertale. You know, like, you should play Undertale before playing this game, because I think it's very much confirmed that, like, the connection to Undertale is beyond just, like, this being an AU with the characters in a new setting. Mm-hmm. I saw that and thought of it, like, you know, yes, Asgore being very framed around like justice, but then as he falls deeper and deeper into like this, you know, hunt for Des, that it's like, it's determination that's taking over him, but in a very unhealthy way.
Oh, like determination.
Yeah, like determination, like, yes, it can be a really good driving force, but like when it's centered around something unhealthy, like that's where, you know, the cracks start to form.
Mm. That's interesting.
Stepping back to your Yellow's room as a analog for the lake disappearance, it is a sandy location surrounding a body of water.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't think of anything at first, because, you know, it's a Zen garden. But I don't know if that's a perfect one-to-one, but that's the thing about how this is all constructed, is everything feels purposeful enough that it could mean something, or it doesn't, but it's still legitimate in its own right. You know, the Zen garden room could be just the Zen garden room for the sake of being a Zen garden room, or it means something, and it drives me absolutely crazy. Because once again, I can't predict where this is going at all. And it's so much fun.
Mm.
Ricky Tony at it again.
Yeah.
Like, even when I'm super wrong, it doesn't feel like a, oh, they dropped the ball. There's not something being followed up on. It's like, oh, I didn't see how the pieces were going to fit. And here they go in this direction. Where will we fly to next?
Wherever Tricky Tony wants us to go. My goodness, I'm having a stroke.
Let me grow wings and fly out of this place, huh?
No. Right.
Proceed.
Oh, proceed. My God. Oh, the other Undertale connection was at the festival when you talk to Sant and he asks you guys, like, he asks Susie to draw her friends. And that picture is in Sans's lab in Undertale.
I don't remember that. I mean, like, obviously, I remember it from this chapter, but I don't remember that in his lab. But I do remember you mentioning it to me once.
Yeah, it's like, if you go into Sans's lab, I don't know if it was from the 10th anniversary stream or something, but, like, there's a thing in Sans's lab where it's like, oh, it's like a crudely drawn picture of three people, and on the back it says, don't forget.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
I thought that was a nod to Earthbound.
Maybe. No. Well, don't forget that Toby always wanted to make Deltarune first.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like confirming that Sans is dimension hopping.
Probably.
What are you up to, Tobias Vulpes Vulpes?
Huh?
Don't worry about it.
Okay. Going forward, I'd like to ask what everyone's favorite characters were in chapter 5.
Ooh.
Well, shoot now, Thievius, you introduced me to some kind of cowboy with all that alliterative written, spoken dialogue, and you expect me not to latch onto him like a flea on a cow?
Yeah, shoot. Sir. Shoot. Yeah, I love Yellow, genuinely. When I was playing through it, it was very fun to voice Yellow. And all, like, and like trying to work through his dialogue. Because obviously, like, some of it was wrong, but trying to, like, put it into actual words, I was having a stroke, I feel. But it was very fun. He's a very fun character. He's very endearing as well. He's such a, like, a gullible little guy. And I love him.
I honestly, the moment that Flowery appeared, I was like, this chapter is gonna be great.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, it's because I kind of do like these characters who are a little troll like. I know that, like, people were really mixed on Flowery, like, when he entered, but I honestly am just, like, in love with the way that he challenged Ralsei.
Right.
You know? Like, challenging Ralsei's beliefs. Like, Ralsei is so by the book on everything. And I feel like the character arc that we're seeing for them is that they are progressively learning how to be their own individual person and how to, you know, acknowledge their own needs and wants, you know, outside of just serving, you know, a very specific role in the story. I don't know. And also those voice lines really got me, you know.
His voice lines are, like, so funny.
Yeah.
So fun. I love the anime cutscene, and I played it before my boyfriend did. And so when my boyfriend was sitting down to play it, I told him, I was like, listen, when you get to the dark world, as soon as you get to the dark world, let me know so I can watch you. And so I sat with him in real time as the cutscene started happening.
Oh my gosh.
And he was his flabbers were gasted. His flabbers were truly gasted.
Flabbers were gasted.
Yeah. Shooketh. I think is the right word. But I really do love Flowery's arc. I love flowery sacrifice. I love how that was foreshadowed in the game in chapter 3.
Was he?
So in like the, you know, like when you're playing that Zelda game in chapter 3, and it's like, you have to go around and take pictures on the island, and one of the pictures you have to take is of a flower that's been cut in half.
Oh, I thought the scarf you get from Pink getting cut in half was bad. This is worse.
Oh my god. That's terrible. Why did you tell me about this?
Don't forget. Don't forget. Actually, I do love Pink, though. Pink is an icon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, icon, the secret and boss.
But my favorite character is Green.
Mm-hmm.
I get
full
it.
Bias.
Green.
Green. Green supremacy.
We do love Green.
Green sweep.
And I do like Aqua's playfulness.
There's just too many characters. They're all good.
Granted, I must say, a lot of the bias is because I did make cheese earlier today.
Oh.
You didn't give any to Orange?
No. I have no orange to give it to, but I would if I could. It's actually a really nice mozzarella. Made it out of some hole. Besides the point, let's keep going.
Real quick, since we're talking about like the flowers, I'd like to mention that on the Undertale wiki, Flowery has a list of crimes against him.
Oh,
he's got kidnapping, unlawful imprisonment, incrimination, harassment, conspiracy, assault and battery, attempted cataclysm by proxy. So love there that. You go.
Did Ross write this?
It could be. I don't know. I would assume yes. Also, can we talk about how much of a hater that Ross was this chapter?
I love it. I love it.
Boy's got some spice.
He does. It's so good. He woke up in the morning and was like, you know what? I'm going to ruin this specific flower's day. I don't want you here.
Actually, question for you guys. When you got to the part where Ralsei is like, oh, you can turn off the voice clips, and then Flowery is like, you can turn off Ralsei's in the configuration menu. Which one did you choose?
I didn't turn anyone off.
I turned off Ralsei just to see what would happen, and he was very upset. Because when you get to the puzzle, if he can talk, he'll just blow up the puzzle. If he can't talk, he is struggling while you fail.
Yeah.
He'll eventually just fall to the ground.
Yeah, he just splats on the ground if you fail enough times. I also turned off Ralsei's, and it turned out to be my saving grace because of the fight using the sound cues.
My goodness.
Ian, did you turn anything off?
I didn't, because I wanted to hear everything Flowery was saying, and I can't do that to Fluffy Boy. If I'm doing the good route, I'm sticking true to the good route.
That's fair. You and I, Ian, we didn't turn anyone off. Let's go. That's what we love to see.
Wow. You guys are so kind.
If I go Paragon, I stick Paragon. If I go Renegade, I go full Renegade. Except for that one time way back in Fable when I was trying to do the heroic route and they called me Chicken Chaser one too many times. And you know what? At 20 feet, Longbow can take somebody's head off. But that's why we have multiple save slots. Speaking of multiple save slots, circling back to what Straub was talking about and circling back to what I was talking about earlier as well, I really appreciate that Flowery in this has the clear parallels to Flowey in that he is meta-aware and desperate to maintain his reality, but he's completely different than Flowey. Mm-hmm. Flowey's a sociopath. Flowey has given up on everything. Flowey is just murderously angry at everything and everyone. Whereas Flowery legitimately cares and wants the best for everyone. Even Chris, who he seems to be a little iffy on, he doesn't want to hurt Chris. Chris. He just doesn't want Chris to hurt anybody else.
Yeah.
And it's the same principle for the character, but in such a refreshingly different way. And I appreciate that a lot.
Right.
That's a really good segue, actually, because the next thing that I kind of had on the docket was about Chris's agency. Who is Chris? I feel like everyone's idea of who Chris is as a character, independent from the player, it's like simultaneously gotten clearer and more murky. And, you know, I personally have this theory that when you have the dialogue choices come up for how Chris would respond for anything, I am of the camp that none of those dialogue choices are what Chris actually wants to say or what Chris would do.
I'd agree with that.
But
because you're taking total control of them, essentially.
Yeah.
They have no real agency.
Yeah. Like, especially when in chapter 4, you know, when like Susie and Noelle are talking for a really long time and Susie's like, yeah, Chris is really good at flirting. And Noelle is so confused because she doesn't know them to flirt at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we think as the player of the two options that are given, oh, this other one feels mean, so flirting must be Chris's option, the correct option. And it's like, but does Chris flirt?
No, I don't think he, I don't think they would. Because it's just like, other than whenever Chris takes out the soul, they have no real agency. Everything that happens in the game is because of what we choose for Chris and for everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they did make that comment about wanting to be slammed against a locker again, and I'm still trying to figure out what's up with that, because I didn't choose that.
I remember that. Wait, Ian, in chapter 4... when Chris ripped us out, what was your reaction to that? Like, when Chris just rips the soul out and you have to navigate through the house?
Panic. Like, what does this mean? What am I doing? How much time do I have? Am I missing anything? I totally missed stuff. And it's like, what do I do? What does this mean? Am I making things worse for Chris by finding him? Is it good that he's not under my control? What does it mean, Toby? Come on, man. I'm here for the ride, but it's rough. Like, kitchen, just like downing the chocolate milk. Is that because his husk needs when they're downing the chocolate milk, do they need the sugar to sustain themselves? Or is this Chris finally free, indulging in something that they want to do? But then the phone rings and the creepy voice talks to Chris, not to us. So what does that mean?
Honestly, I feel like this is a personal theory of mine, but I feel like Chris is making these dark fountains so that we, like the player, the soul, would lose and hopefully leave Chris alone. But at least that was my original theory until we saw Chris, you know, without the soul for a long time and they were kind of dying. So I honestly don't really know what it all means. Honestly, I wish I did, but it's really interesting to think about, like, what the whole relationship between Chris and the soul is. And it's like, does Chris hate us? Is it like a, what's the word, like a parasitic relationship kind of thing? Or I guess I should say like a symbiotic relationship. It's like, bro, we both, like, we need each other.
If they just wanted chocolate milk, we could have gotten chocolate milk. You gotta talk to me.
That's true.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing, is that the nature of when, you know, the player is taking control of Chris, like, they don't really have power, and we were never meant to take control of Chris in the first place. We were supposed to be making our own avatar,
right?
You know, and then it got discarded. How funny.
Discarded or moved?
Discarded.
I don't know. Something about weird routes gotten me on edge.
What if we encounter the vessel in chapter 7?
The weird out final boss.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. And
we have to remember what we named our vessel.
Oh my god, no. Oh, that's no. The only way to be able to remember what you named your vessel.
That's the thing. It's literally like you have to remember like the name and the blood type, what they like, and you know, whatnot.
You have to rebuild your vessel from scratch.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna die.
That'd be cool, actually.
I think it would.
It'd be a pain, but that'd be really cool.
The weird route, I think, to speak on the weird route openly, and a little bit of a warning for anyone listening, we will be talking about the weird route if that bothers you. That was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy as hell, man.
Uncomfortable.
What Susie was saying Noelle was doing before you meet up with her it set off a lot of alarms.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bunch of alarms. And then...
Well, before you even start, you have Chris, who's been in bed all day. And then the only reason they get out of bed is because the soul knocks them out of bed.
Yeah.
And then for the first little bit, as Chris is walking around, they're twitching. They're not stable.
Mm-hmm.
They're collapsing, and Susie has to be the one to physically support them. And this all underlines, and to me, Susie is the hero of prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter which route you're taking. Susie has the character arc. Susie is the one who is being the most heroic out of the three in terms of dealing with everything in the dark world and such and such. She's the star of this. Chris is just a very important side character, and we're getting things through their perspective.
Yeah. Chris is just being dragged along.
Someone said too in that opening sequence for the weird route that if you look at the sprites, it kind of looks like Chris was crying in bed.
Aww.
Oh, we are just making this baby go through it.
Yeah. It's terrible, horrible things. Terrible, horrible things.
What are we doing to Chris, man?
No, literally. But actually, the only way you can go to the lake in the weird route, you have to talk to Sans first.
Interesting.
To get the loaf of bread.
And the bread. Okay, so there's... So Mother One... There is, I know this sounds out of nowhere, but in Mother 1, in order to break the bonds or barriers in game, at least like bug-wise, you can't eat this one item called breadcrumbs. If you don't eat the breadcrumbs, you can clip yourself out of the game itself. That wouldn't have bothered me as much as if it wasn't for the fact you're also eating honey toast. There's something there, and I can't figure out what it is. And it tasks me.
Well, that kind of goes into... I added some supplemental images. But there is kind of a theory that, like, the whole thing with Chris and Noelle going into the lake is that they are literally trying to clip out of bounds of the town. Because within the world of this game, there is nothing outside of the town. So, like, what if it's, like, a speed running strat? Like, that they're trying to, like, cut through and skip chapter 5 and 6 in order to get to chapter 7.
Trying to get this finale.
That's how they get to the bunker.
Could be. It's very possible. Tricky Tony has a lot of surprises for us.
Yeah, and how do you cross the barrier with a human soul and a monster soul?
Speaking of that part of the weird route, I've seen some theories saying that, like, when they were trying to, or I guess when they were clipping out of bounds or going underwater and the screen was just going crazy, that's Noelle and Chris becoming the knight. I don't know how that works. or like I just don't know how that would even work, but that's an interesting theory, something that I have to look more into. But
because it echoes what happened in Undertale, like the whole reason why, like, they wanted to break down the barrier, they needed human souls, it needed to be a human and a monster.
Mm-hmm.
But that bit of soul that got into Noelle, when you as Chris die as a character, you're not controlling that body anymore. What about that other bit?
But yeah, the theory is that the knight is Chris and Noelle from chapter 7 of the Weird Route, and the knight is basically going through the game's meta and going through the different save files and stuff in order to, you know, attack in other save files. It's that kind of.
But for what purpose, though? That's my little, like the catch on it is, like, what, why are they doing this?
I don't know. Des? I don't know how Des fits into it. I thought we were going to get a little more Des lore.
Mm-hmm. We know there was an incident where she went missing, but we don't know what the incident is or why she went missing.
Mm. Well, it has to do something with the Dark World, because Asgore experienced the Dark Fountain.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew what to look for and knew what to ask about, and he somehow had a Shadow Crystal.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't like the first Dark World that he knew about either.
Right. And Ralsei seemed upset about that because that didn't sync with what he knew about how this worked.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going with the game analog theory here, you also have the fact that Ralsei says that he can't break the rules that he's working under. Otherwise, it'll end their world. And you have the entire subquest with the old Zelda style video game dungeon where you fight that weird black mantle and you have that weird little pixel Chris that'll pop out and try to shank Susie.
Mm.
So if we're building, this is me fumbling in the dark here. Don't take too much.
I'm fumbling in the dark. What?
Sorry. if we're assuming that this is all building analogs to game worlds existing as their own realities to themselves, and if we assume the Roaring Knight is Chris and Noelle, then perhaps what the Dark Knight is attempting to do is crash the system to break out of that endless cycle.
Yep.
That would tie a little back into what Undertale was doing, where when you fight Sans, he talks about how you have these reports of realities just being reloaded and eliminated over and over again, and he's there to stop it. So maybe in this regard, the Roaring Knight is trying to do the same thing, break whatever Samsara has captured the Deltarune world.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all going on a whole bunch of assumptions in one direction.
Right. So like the Roaring Knight would be Deltarune's version of Undertale Sans, specifically trying to stop the player, which that's really cool. I like that idea.
And yeah, because they've already like taken, you know, people who were considered like major Undertale bosses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Undyne fight and the Asgore fight, I feel like were the two really big bosses that you had to fight in Undertale.
Right.
They tried to, yeah.
And she was technically a boss fight, just, you know, in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
She
was.
I was going to say, this also might tie into, like, an older theory on how the world of Undertale might itself be a dark world.
Yeah.
Because, again, the knight has only taken Undertale characters so far. It's only gone after Undertale characters. So,
I mean, they're all kind of Undertale characters. Susie is an extremely obscurely referenced one. You really have to go looking for it, but she is referenced in Undertale.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the holidays, how they factor into it, if they were cut content or what, but no. Leah's shaking her head. I'm making stuff up. Oh, well.
Actually, I was going to say something I just remembered. Is that in Undertale, there's kind of this like unexplained statue in Waterfall. And someone said, because you know how darkeners that go outside of their like dark fountain, they can't exist and they turn to stone, like how Lancer and Rules did in chapter 2.
Yeah.
And so what if that's Ralsei?
That could be.
What if?
God. Tobias Foxington, please give us the answers. Give us chapters 6 and 7 right now.
I feel like we went into this chapter with more questions.
Yeah. That's genuinely how I feel. I feel like that a lot of the questions that we have just weren't really answered. Or like we didn't really get much else to the questions that we already have, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like again, Asgore, he knows about the Dark Worlds. There have been Dark Worlds in the past before Chris ever met Susie or they ever met Ralsei and all that. So like, what does he know? What does Asgore know?
Something else that's, when we were talking about what were our earlier expectations, the Gearsome fight, he talks about how there was no chapter 6 or 7. He never got to them. Mm-hmm. So it's up to the next generation to pick up the pen and write how it plays out. And that's where I was expecting more fallout from chapter 5, to have this big deviation and we'd see whatever parallel routes. And I guess we kind of get that since the weird route jumps straight to chapter 7,
mm-hmm.
which means chapter 6 is whatever that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the open-ended direction that I thought it would be. Again, I can't predict where this is going. Also, what does the heart balloon mean?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Like the little blue heart balloon you gotta chase?
No, at the end of the game, after you exit the flower shop and everything's dark and torn down, and Susie asks you to walk her home, you can refuse her twice. And Chris walks off screen, you hear a couple weird noises, and they come back with a balloon with a heart on it, and you walk back through town. The difference being, you don't control Chris. Chris follows Susie.
Well, because Chris put the soul in the balloon, and so it's basically Chris's way of being like, you are going to go through this cutscene, and you're going to be a good friend to Susie by walking them home. That's how I interpreted it. Anyway.
You're not going to make me be mean to my friend Susie.
Yeah.
I wasn't gonna.
That would explain the squishy noises then. Okay. Yeah, I buy that.
I also, speaking of that walk home, I do very much like that. You kind of just expect at first to try to go to like one of the apartments. You're looking all over. Okay, where's her home? But then you go to Ralsei's Dark World and then the cutscene happens. She's like, yeah, thanks for walking me home. I really enjoy the fact that she has made the Dark World her home. I really do.
But I think it's tragic.
It's
not healthy for her. I'm glad she has somewhere, but it's not healthy for her.
Nope.
Like, because you know how like Susie is really anxious about going back to Chris's house after the end of chapter 4? Because yeah. Toriel got drunk. So that led me to believe that, you know, I don't think Susie has a good home life. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't talk about her parents. I do wonder if alcoholism plays a role in that because of how bothered she was by seeing Toriel in that state. But like, Ralsei has said on multiple occasions that the Dark World is not real. You know, like, that was the whole thing in the beginning of chapter 3 when Ralsei was like, you know, you should just, like, forget about us when this is all over. But, you know, Susie like, it is so painfully real to her, but the truth is, like, she's just staying in a broom closet in the school. And the other thing being, all of the food in the dark world is also not real. Like, you can have all of these delicious treats, but they're not real. They're not actually going to fill you up.
Right.
So that is probably why Susie eats chalk.
That is so sad.
Yeah, that's Pico. Yeah.
Or is it Pico?
I think it's still a matter of her being a crazy monster lady, but there's also that, yes.
But
it's like Chris, it's like Chris with the moss.
Moss? What is with the moss?
It's funny. That's the thing. I guess. I don't know. I mean, I guess you only really eat moss because the player makes Chris do it. I doubt Chris would ever actually eat moss on their own.
But if plant life can become, can reach consciousness in the dark world, then why doesn't moss?
Good question. Maybe we'll find out in chapter 7.
All sorts of inanimate objects become individuals, and then you also have, like, stairs that are just stairs. The floor is just a floor. I wouldn't go too far into asking why isn't everything anthropomorphized in the dark world. I get what you're coming from, but I, this case, I'm thinking the cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah.
My question with the moss is, am I wrong? But I seem to remember when you do choose to eat the moss, Chris's reaction seems to be positive.
Yeah, you get mossed out.
But is that a positive reaction, though?
Maybe they're just a weird little freak sometimes. And you know what?
I think they are a gremlin. Very, very high gremlin energy.
Yeah.
I want to know more about Chris outside of the player's influence.
I want to at least share some of the moss with Susie.
Yeah.
Did Susie ask for moss?
I don't know.
Susie got mad in chapter 1 when it's like, you ate moss without me, bro? Like, what the hell?
Ah, that's very Susie.
I also wonder, bringing up your point about how the dark world isn't real, then what is the point of building it up? Because you make the conscious effort to pacify and recruit and bring all these crazy characters from across different dark worlds, letting them endure. The dark fountains go away, but they still endure. So are you building something from nothing, or is this going to be an extra twist of the knife at chapter 7 where it's like, what? You saved the town. Time to finish off this last dark portal. Bye.
Well, the way, because you know how the end of chapter 5, it's the whole thing of, like, Flowery asks Ralsei, like, what makes your dark world better than ours, you know? Or, you know, worth saving more than ours. And I mean, Ralsei does talk about the fact that, like, the castle town is kind of meant to be a central hub where, you know, darkeners from different dark worlds can all coexist in there without turning to stone. However, what if that means, like, that if we have, like, recruited everyone from all of these dark worlds, that at the end of chapter 7, we have to make the hard choice of destroying Castletown in order to defeat a Titan?
I don't like that.
I don't like that either, but also don't forget that we are building up Ralsei's, essentially, like his people, his kingdom, because he's a prince of the dark with no subjects.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, Chris isn't the one closing the fountains. It's the soul.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Chris is the one making them. Which,
and if the fountains are what is endangering the world, and the soul is super sus, then why is the soul?
That's what I'm saying. It's just so confusing. What does it all mean?
I'm sussy in the dark.
All right.
It feels like it will fit. Once all the pieces are in play, it'll fit. It'll make sense. I don't even think we're going to get, like, some big, long exposition dump that will lay it all out. I'd hope we don't. That's just not the nature of the game. I feel like people will be able to parse it out. But you would think with so many pieces, we could get most of the picture. Like, at least the corners are there. We can tell it's a horse, right? This is a horse. Don't tell me it's a train. It's got to be a horse.
Yeah, I feel like by the end of chapter 7, we're going to get the kind of picture where it's like you take off your glasses and you can kind of see what's going on, but you have to make inferences as to what the finer details are.
Until we get to chapter 7 and Toby says, thank you so much for playing my game. Here's chapter 8.
Yeah.
I can see it happening.
Here's chapter 8, Christmas die mode. Everything is harder.
What if we have to what if we get to chapter 7 and like we have to replay the game? And like the game is changed. Yeah.
The entire game in one chapter?
Or not like the entire game in one chapter, but like, you know how like they kind of tested it out in Undertale already, where if you do go through with a full like no mercy route, you kill everyone, you defeat Sans, you get to the end of that. Even if you delete all of the save files, if you start a new game and you go through it in a pacifist route, like it amends the ending because it remembers that you did do a no mercy route. Like the ending is like changed slight. Like it's basically implied that like once everyone gets up to the surface, they all get killed off. So what if it's something like that where we get to chapter 7, we do everything, and it's like, you're missing something. Go back to the beginning and replay it a different way.
Do all of that again.
Yeah.
You didn't actually beat the game. Do it all again. Have fun.
Because your choices didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I that's like the whole central, like, I think, point to this game is that your choices don't matter.
Yeah.
Well, they did add a question mark recently.
I'm sorry?
The question mark on the site?
Oh, yeah.
I know nothing about this. The ARG.
Oh, yeah. You should probably. The site is a delightful thing that's just. It's not gaslighting if it only changes after a chapter comes out. So. I don't know.
It's not gaslighting. It's Gaster.
Yeah. No, it's like the Deltarune ARG. That they've been kind of putting together as the chapters release.
Gotcha.
Is there... Oh, this is, like, so, like, random, but I guess kind of related to the whole Out of Bounds thing. Do we actually think Azrael's in college?
No. I don't think he is.
His flag hasn't been swapped over.
That and that tone of voice.
What do you mean? Whatever do you mean, Mr. Flynn?
I just kind of took it on faith that he was in college, that this is the normal world. Why do I take anything for granted? Seriously.
Right.
Because what if, you know, does college exist? How do we know that?
Well, school exists, so a higher form of education likely has to exist.
But the difference is we can go to the school, but we can't go to the college. College is somewhere. And the only other time a character says, I want to do something crazy. First, it's Noelle in the lake when she's like, let's do something crazy and go out of bounds. But the other time is when Toriel's like, huh, I just had a crazy thought. What if we got Azrael early?
Going against the grain.
Yeah. What if Azrael's in the dark?
Azrael's getting freaky in the dark.
Yeah.
What if Azrael is the night? I have no idea.
Actually, what if Azrael's in the night? That's actually a really good question. Literally
anyone could be. There's like, who is it now? We have Des, we have Azrael, and we have the fusion of Noelle and Chris as the
night. We have Carol, and we also have Rudy.
Carol as well, and Rudy. I honestly don't think that Rudy is. I'm gonna be honest. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
I feel like his illness would be too much of a red herring.
Or, in the way that I could see it working, is that in the dark world, he doesn't have the illness. In the same way that, like, Gerson is alive in the dark world, but Gerson is Ash in the real world.
Actually, on the note of Rudy, I just might be looking too much into character design, but why does Rudy and Flowery have the same body shape and sprite shape?
Girona. Because it's based off of Asgore's desires, because, like, when Flowery's like, oh, I was your dad's college roommate. No, that was Rudy. But I think it was, like, the flowers, like, kind of responding to Asgore's desire for a return to the normalcy, for companionship, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you lose your job because of a very sad incident involving, you know, a family friend's kid. You go on this, like, hunt to try and get everything. Your family kind of starts to fall apart. Your wife leaves you, and then your best friend gets sick. And you have no money, and you're broke. So, like, I just thought it was, like, Flowery kind of representing, like, Asgore's desire to return to simple times, to the good times in college, when he just hang out with his best bud.
I get it.
If he was based off of Rudy, though, wouldn't he be Deer Moss?
Maybe.
Don't take that seriously. That was a horrible joke. It's a dad joke about dads. Don't take it seriously.
I get it. That's a funny one, Mr. Flynn.
Girona. It's not. Thank you.
Girona. Oh, yeah. And the Full House reference.
Yeah, the Full House reference.
The Full House reference that they literally made Flowery's theme based off of Full House, and the Full House lyrics are very similar to the themes of Deltarune. Kid, don't sell your dreams. Don't sell your dreams so soon. When a light is out there and you're all alone, a light will be waiting to carry you home. Come on, Tricky Tony, what are you plotting?
I think Tobias Foxington is a fan of Full House.
Need to do a comparison between those lyrics and the lyrics from the minigame, the music minigame.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think the lyrics for the music minigame is like how Chris and Noel are going to navigate wherever they end up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, the heart is the arc or something like that. The light that will guide you the way, because they're in the dark.
Girona.
I'm still sold on the idea that the Roaring Knight is someone from the holidays, just because somebody pointed out Roaring Knight, Silent Knight.
Mm. Oh, wait, no, Carol. That one theory.
Yeah.
What there's theory? This one Rankin Bass special, the Santa Claus is Coming to Town one.
Oh, my God.
And in it, there's a song about putting one step in front of the other. And during that song, it's when the wizard, the Winter Wizard, the guy who's just being an asshole for most of the special, he's lost all of his powers because he did one thing nice once. And then Santa's like, it's all right. You can still have friends and go on and keep going and such. You just gotta take one foot in front of the other. And then I kept thinking about that while I'm watching two characters I like walk straight into water.
Interesting.
Mm. Actually, on the note of the water, what about the fact we probably ate someone?
Huh?
Oh, yeah. Do you know this, Ian?
No, what?
Do you know who Onion-san is?
Yeah, I never got Onion-san to trigger. Why? How? What?
When you go to the festival and you go to the bird, the blue bird guy, and, you know, ask for takoyaki, and they say, wow, it tastes like onion.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's not the kicker. The kicker is they ask you for a currency that doesn't exist in the game.
Oh, yeah. No.
They ask you for a currency that exists in Undertale.
Also, Onion hears the music coming from under the lake, and after he goes to find what it is, you never see him again, and then the only time you hear from him is about the takoyaki stand.
Oh, no.
Chris, did we eat Onion-san? Is that what you did when you didn't have the soul in you?
And we feed it to everyone. We eat onion san. We feed onion san to Susie. We feed onion san to Noelle.
Also, no. One of the sprites next to the takoyaki stand is also one of the sprites used for one of the Gaster followers from Undertale.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going down the Gaster rabbit hole. I already watched one video on that. That was very well done, very convincing. Makes my head hurt. We're already deep enough into this puzzle that doesn't have enough pieces. Might be a horse train. I don't know. Without Gaster.
Yeah.
I ship Gaster with onion-san.
Actually, can I speak my truth?
Yes.
I kind of love rage baiting Chris into being shipped with Birdly. It's so
wonderful. It's wonderful.
Like, come on. Which is
even more fascinating with Seth really wanting one of Birdly's feathers. Where'd you get that from? Why'd you have that on you?
Don't worry about it.
Like, I don't know, like Curdly Nation, guys.
Curdly.
The shipping in this game is fascinating because, like, I also think it's kind of a window into, like, the fact that we don't know how Chris feels, because I think that it's kind of implied that Chris might have some sort of residual feelings for either Noelle or for Susie that they are not able to express because they are constrained by us. And apparently Chris gets really mad, like, if you go around the festival and if you have Susie and Noelle do everything, and then when you get to the Ferris wheel, like, they don't allow us to, like, basically see what happens because, like, you didn't let Chris do anything at the festival.
Gotcha. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I will
shipping. Who did you pick during the concert? Who did you send up on stage?
I sent Susie and Noelle.
No, the in the festival when it's Pizza Pants on stage.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the King and Queen thing. My bad.
No.
I don't remember doing the Pizza Pants thing. Oh wait, no, yes I do. It was the what was his name? I think it was like the blue guy. Yeah, nice guy. Nice guy. Yep,
I sent nice also guy sent the nice guy.
So at first when I did it, because I didn't realize that it would have a consequence, I actually sent Caddy up first.
No.
It was so weird, and then I was like, wait. So then I like reset it because I had just saved, you know, right before that. And then I sent nice guy and then, you know, got that ending. Actually, adjacent to that, have you heard the music for if you send up Bratty?
No, I have not.
Yeah, because that's the route I went, but I don't remember what happened.
It's horrifying. The music is, okay, I'm going to be so real. Like, I think that's Toby's worst track. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I am dead serious. You can hold me to that. That is Toby's worst track in all of the music that he's made as the worst track.
Editor, could you please put up a little bit of the music right here?
Sure. Let's hope we don't get copyright claimed.
I don't think we might because Materia, but who knows? Yeah. What was the Bratty route, Ian?
Let's see. Bratty is just like mortified that he's going through all this, and you tell her you need to own up to what you did. So she goes up there and he's like, girlfriend? And she's like, oh my God, whatever. Girlfriend. Yeah, okay, like we really need to like talk and stuff. And before she can like shoot him down, he points out that he already invested in this couple's card that gets them a discount on pizza so long as they're a couple.
Oh no.
And suddenly, you know, she's kind of cool with them hanging out.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Bratty. What are we doing?
Bratty.
I think Caddy's route was something like she goes up there and I think like she kind of just feels really bad, but she doesn't come clean. But like Pizza Pants is like, oh my gosh, let's go on a date. And they go on a date.
Oh no, no, it's not a thing nearly that wholesome. She goes up on stage and he's like, girlfriend, and goes, oh my god, no, like this guy could never get a date. Anyway, we're on the stage now, let's play a song. And so they do their little song. Aww. And they afterwards he's really at a loss at what to do. And she's rambling as she does. And she goes, oh my god, I don't know why your girlfriend didn't show up. Like, oh my god, what if she died? Oh my god, that'd be so tragic. I'm so sad now. Do you need ice cream? Let's go get ice cream and also start a band. And she drags him off.
Jeez, dude.
That's so funny.
And what really cracks me up is in that route, Bratty is just livid that he went with Caddy and is plotting his murder.
I love that.
Horrible people.
Horrible. I also, wait, did you guys read the letter in the drawer at the beginning?
No.
I feel like that was being... I feel like I was being cautioned not to go down that road. I haven't taken any money out of the drawer either.
Well, we know that Des and Azriel got busy.
Oh. Are you saying that they got freaky in the dark?
They did get freaky in the dark, actually.
Interesting. Okay.
Right. Interesting.
New theory, Roaring Dark is their kid. Okay.
Roaring Night is their child. Desreal. Like,
and also Pizza Pants confirms this because he's like, yeah, like you, like your brother and Des, like, you know, they weren't practicing, but they were doing something in there.
My gosh. Oh my gosh. Tricky Tony.
Oh my god. I kind of love that, though.
Good for them.
But I stand by Curdly Nation.
Honestly, I think that's as much, like, I think, like, in terms of the story, I think that Susie and Noelle should definitely end up together. But there is this one animation that I've been seeing on social media with Susie and Chris, and they're just, like, they're sitting at the diner, they're eating, and, Susie just brings up like a box, like a small little box, and hands it to like just puts on the table. Chris picks it up, opens it. It's a wedding ring or like an engagement ring. Chris puts it on, and then like they fist bump, and then they kiss, and they just keep eating, and they're just chill about it. And I just think that animation is really sweet, and I like
good.
That.
It is very good.
It's adorable.
It's a really good one, and I like in a way like. The depiction of Chris and Noelle being like this Greek tragedy is very apt.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like they are a tragic pairing together.
Extremely.
Yes. I would ask what our predictions for next chapter are, but honestly, like who the fuck knows?
I genuinely have no idea. Not after this one.
I think it's legitimately going to be a very big break from the form that has been established.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they didn't open up a... Sorry, you go ahead.
No, you finish.
Okay, I was just going to say, I don't think that we saw anyone open up a dark world at the end, at least that I can remember.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So, like, all the dark worlds other than Ralsei's are closed, at least that we know of, and of course the one in the bunker, but... You know, that I really don't know where we could go.
I think the next Dark World is going to be at the hospital.
That'd be an interesting one.
Could be the hospital, could also be the Holiday Mansion.
Could be that.
Ooh, yeah, no,
that honestly, too. I would like to see a Dark World in Sansa's house, because we have no idea, like... I'm pretty sure we can assume that Papyrus is there, right? We can just assume that. Like, what's going on with that? I want to, like, is my boy okay?
I kind of wonder, when you go up to the door and you try to go in, You say, well, maybe, Susie says, maybe now that we have Noelle with us, it'll be different. And she goes, I don't understand what that means. And it doesn't open. And Sion's just casually says off to the side, eh, maybe if you had somebody else with you.
Mm.
I'm wondering if there's going to be some weird, not necessarily weird route, but some odd off the beaten path thing where Papyrus joins the party and that's how you get in the house.
Oh, I'd be so happy.
And it's just to like bring him home. And he's like, thanks for bringing me home. And that's it. That's all you get.
Just a small little side quest.
Or as something clicks, remember how in Sansa's house in Undertale, it had the weird rainbow warp door.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh,
what if chapter 7, the town becomes a dark world and Sansa's house is the first portal?
Maybe.
Ooh. That'd be cool.
That'd be crazy.
I like the idea of the hospital being a dark world because, one, we could follow up on Rudy. And two, we know Chris went through some kind of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
If you follow the egg route. So maybe we could get more insight into what's going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
Question.
I don't think we're getting Noelle back, though. I think setting up the door and Susie being, we need to bring her in on this. I think that's all setting you up for disappointment. I think she's going to be so distraught over her dad's condition. I think Carol's going to run interference. I don't think we're getting Noelle back.
Probably not.
Not in chapter 6, at least.
Depending on if you, maybe depending on if you aborted stuff or not, too.
Yeah, because there was an accident with her dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he like, fell over.
But if you, like, if you did, like, basically the weird route up until chapter 5 and then you chicken out of the lake scene, you basically proceed through as normal. And so it's like,
yeah.
But the chime doesn't play.
Yeah. The chime doesn't play.
It also recontextualizes Nicole because Noelle, dadgummit, because when you see Noelle in Susie's arms, her portrait is different. Than when you do it in the proper route. And I'm calling it the proper route because they belong together. It's been prophesized.
True.
So how is that going to play out? Because it's not, I guess, the official weird route, because we know that gets bumped to chapter 7.
Yeah.
Is it just going to be Noelle plays out the same role as before? It's just you have this lingering thought of, oh, she is faking it till she makes it. I don't know.
I want to know so badly.
I do want to know.
Do we have any hint, tease at a release date for chapter 6?
2027.
Well, at least it's July.
It is July.
It's July. And then once January 1st comes, we will be saying Deltarune tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Every single day until it actually releases.
Every single day. I think I will say, while I, on the note of the prophecy, because Ian, I know you seem, you are in the camp that the prophecy is pertaining to Susie. You know, Des and Azrael are in the dark somewhere. And part of me wonders if Des and Azrael are the heroes of the prophecy. But
maybe I'm still currently thinking that Des is the Roaring Knight. I feel like that fits the best so far. I'm very prepared to be wrong, but that's where I'm going right now. And that Ralsei is some form of XB of Azrael. It's not Azrael himself. There's been too many little nudges saying it's not Azrael, but it's some kind of construct that Azrael is using to protect Chris as this falls out. Because Azrael knows what's going on. He experienced whatever happened before the demon summoning that Caddy was involved with. He's involved with this somehow, but he's removed for whatever reason. I think Ralsei is his proxy. And going with Gearsome's incredibly frustrating but awesome fight, I feel like the emphasis is on the current party is the one that will be the heroes and the big changers, and it's worded openly enough that it can go a couple routes. I'm thinking that if you go the good boy route that I'm currently on, it will be Susie who is the hero of the story. She is the dragon of change from the video game within the novelization. She is the agent of change. She is the one who will make the difference, and that Noelle is the maiden. But I think there's also room for Chris to step up to be the hero, and that Susie is the maiden, however that works out. There is room for it to go different routes, but still ultimately end in about the same place, fulfilling the prophecy, and again, showing that your choices ultimately didn't matter.
I think with Ralsei, there's like, I think Ralsei could either be something specific to Azrael, or the other thing that I've seen is that Ralsei is a tree. Because of the lore that we have about plants in chapter 5, and that the aspen trees, which are the trees in Hometown, that they have roots that run very, very deep and spread out very far. And that could potentially explain why Ralsei is able to hop from Dark World to Dark World. I don't know how strong of a theory that is.
He does wear a very green pointy hat.
He does.
Well, he did point out that he's a special case.
See, for my idea, call me crazy here, but I feel like it's a Kami and King Piccolo situation, which, for those of you that you don't know, in Dragon Ball Z, there's a character named Kami, who was a Namekian, and it was also the guardian of Earth, like, essentially God. And, essentially, to become, like, a pure guardian of Earth, he expelled all the evil from himself, and that created a completely evil version of himself that named itself King Piccolo. So, it's like two sides of the same coin, but they are the exact same person, just, you know, split between two entities, if that makes sense. So, maybe there's something there? I don't know. Just a thought.
Maybe.
I feel like it'd be something really interesting.
Yeah. This game just takes you on a ride.
I know. I love it. And I don't want it to end, but it's going to.
I know. I'm going to be really sad when Chapter 7 comes out.
I know.
Be crying in the dark.
I'm crying in the dark.
I feel like I said this the last time we got together in Deltarune, but I really appreciate the fact that you can play through this without touching Undertale, without doing any of the various routes, without looking at the wiki, and you can get a solid little RPG experience without being thrown for a loop. There's nothing missing. There's no key component to interrupt your enjoyment. But if you dig a little bit and you start connecting things, you get more out of it.
Right.
Yeah. And if you dig a little further, you get even more. And if you dig even deeper, you reach the Dark World and drive yourself insane. But it still all works.
Yep.
It works on so many levels without compromising itself. And that is so immensely intimidating. I mean, if it were just a straight like story, that kind of level of narrative construction is awe inspiring. But the fact that it is interactive media with an active ARG going on blows my mind. I cannot conceive how you keep this many plates spinning and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Tricky Tony.
I do genuinely believe that Toby Fox and like his team, like behind Undertale and Deltarune, they're just like, these are genuinely like two masterclass games in terms of like everything, mostly, in my opinion. It's just crazy.
I want to know, what was Toby's dream? Because Toby said that this is based on a dream that he had. And it's like, what did you go through in the hours of the night when you had your eyes closed, resting your head upon your pillow. Is that Camilla?
Toby had a dream once of a of being a knight, and their dear friend froze a bird to death. That was the dream.
Ah, he forgot to take the chicken out of the freezer.
Oh no, Toby!
Now he's gonna starve. Chicken out
the freezer is crazy. Oh no. Oh, Birdly.
Birdly.
You know.
Weird route, Birdly.
I hope we can defrost the chicken. I hope that's possible.
I doubt it, but we'll see.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, God. Weird route, Dark World Hospital, frozen zombie Birdly boss.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
Oh, shit.
Oh. Oh, geez.
Oh no.
Wait. What if it's like the true lab in Undertale?
Like the Dark World version of the hospital is the true lab?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Like everyone's melting.
All the amalgamations are there. Oh, dude.
See, now you've gotten me all worried about the whole fact that there's that whole icy mascot. Ice melts.
Oh.
Maybe we enter the fires of hell.
Maybe we just literally go to hell in chapter 6.
There's too much.
There's too much to think about, too much to theorize.
Yeah.
There's that whole device underscore friend thing that we keep seeing.
Whatever. Gaster, chapter 7, side B. Whatever side B is gonna be. Yeah, apparently that's like a thing from like physical media. But
yeah, with like Rob, cassette tapes.
Come on.
Could you imagine if
back sold came out when you said that? Come on.
Could you imagine if chapter like 7's just on a Commodore's cassette or something?
Hi guys, my name is Toby Fox, and here's chapter 7, but you can only play it on a Commodore 64. Have fun.
Yeah.
You monster.
Good luck trying to find one. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or, you know, we to unlock more of the world building, he's gonna make another game.
What's another anagram of Deltarune? That's what we need. That's what we need to figure out. That's the third game.
Nut dealer?
Yes, there you go. Thank you, Noni. Nut dealer.
Yeah.
Finally, Spamton's time to shine.
Finally.
Maybe you know.
Holy organic, naturally sourced.
Honestly, a little game where you're just selling different sorts of like tree nuts to people, that it's like an incremental game, would be kind of cute.
Tobias Fonsington, get on it. We got free ideas coming from the Bumblecast. We got you.
Yeah. We're cooking over here in the Bumblecast.
Toby, hire those people.
Hire this man.
All right, is that all we got?
I think that's what we can muster before we break into a million pieces.
Sounds good to me.
Oh, I don't trust the Holiday family. Okay, that's it.
I don't think anyone does.
I'm done. I've exhausted all my exhaustion.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I think we're all good then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on our mad ramblings of Deltarune. Hope you've enjoyed the game yourself when you played through. I hope you're looking for chapter 6 as much as we are. Any theories that we missed, comment below. Let us know what obvious thing we missed and how it's quite clearly plain as day what the story's going to do. Because you might be right. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Don't do the weird route. It's worrisome. And we will see you next time on the Bumblecast.
Bye.
Bye.